The Great Canadian Talk Show.
It was only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. This very special edition, once again, an interview with someone who's demanding answers out of public safety officials and out of City Hall, and actually out of the province, I think, as well. We're going to be getting to that. I want to thank all of our regular listeners, as well as those who have joined us over the course of the last few months. This is a continuation as Season 40 continues to roll along, and you can find every episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast on actionline.ca under the podcast tab, as well as we have what would be used to be called print stories, text stories, about some of the podcast topics, and often things that we don't cover on the podcast or only touch on tangentially. But there's more information under the blog tab on the far right of the website, actionline.ca. If you have any comments, story tips, suggestions, feedback, want to provide support through advertising or through Interact, you can do so by contacting me, martygoldlive@gmail.com. We've been at this for 20 years in various forms, whether it was on radio with Kick FM, on television with City Circus on Shaw TV, or back here once again revived in podcast form. We are here for you. We're here for the community. We're here to tell your stories. And we don't take the same narrative tactics that the mainstream media does. And we have a different kind of experience, on the ground experience. We've gotten our hands dirty in the course of investigations, but how did we learn to do investigations? We learned the hard way, going back to in my 20s, becoming attached to people like Yoram Mizrahi and Nick Chernet, understanding the way media worked, understanding the way politics worked, and understanding the way community worked, as well as a lot of other people had a hand in crafting and shaping the kind of career that I've had, having worked in radio and television as a reporter, as well as extensively doing work online in the new frontier of digital media. Today, an interview, we specialize in these kinds of long-form interviews you're going to hear over the course of this episode, from Sheena Patterson. Sheena is and her family suffered a tremendous loss. The 911 service was called, and they've been trying to get answers ever since, not only about what happened, but about what should be happening with certain kinds of calls coming from distressed individuals in the community. Sheena, welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. Can you tell us, my audience, a little bit about the individual we're talking about, who is the subject of the 911 call and who lost his life, Dan Rentz? Can you tell us about Dan, please?
Absolutely, I can. Dan was very special. He was viciously unique and unlike anybody else I'd ever met in my entire life to date, for sure. He was the strongest human I've ever met, both mentally and physically. He was also so curious, sweet, and gentle. He loved and he valued love and dedication and loyalty over everything. We had 27 years together. I was the head. He was the neck. He was always guiding me to be calm, collected, and kind, and to always choose love over fear. You knew when he entered the room because his laugh was loud and genuine. It would shake. His gait was unforgettable. He was fierce and ready.
So he had a larger-than-life personality.
Larger-than-life. Determination literally emanated from his pores. If he wanted something done, like literally no stopping him, he could build, fix anything. He was so smart. Mm-hmm. And if he didn't know how to do it, he would just research it and figure it out.
And Dan, was he a lifelong Winnipegger?
Yeah, he lived here. Well, he was born in Alberta, but he moved here when he was young. We met when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And
you had a daughter together.
Yeah, we have a daughter. Her name is Lily. She's 21 years old. And he was such a loving and kind man. He would even teach her, like, from a young age. He's like, be careful to avoid the ants when you're walking because you don't want to hurt them. He was 6'4" and so powerful, yet he was so sweet and loving, you know? He was just truly special, you know? And we've had a really hard time processing all of this.
I want to speak about the incident in question.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want you to feel uncomfortable. You don't have to tell too much in terms of background on Dan and your family. We're very respectful of that. But this goes back to November of 2022 when he placed a call to 911 from his home, which was on Logan Avenue near the Stock Exchange Hotel by Logan and Arlington. It's in that vicinity. And can you first tell us, had he dealt with 911 before?
Well, he had called 911 before. He was suffering, unlike many other Manitobans, he suffered from mental illness and, unfortunately, addictions as well. COVID hit. He was laid off from his job. He was isolated at home, and he had a really hard time. He did contact 911 a few times. There was mental health issues. They knew it. I had contacted them on many times. I had spoke to them at the home many times when they had to come out for other reasons. So other reasons than mental health. And the addictions part, I truly believe that those who get high are simply just trying to escape feeling so low, And he had gone to the hospital and he was trying to work through his stuff. And there was no resources when he left. They gave him a medication that made him, feel like off inside, and he was having a hard time just dealing with it all,
And we just in another interview that I conducted with another family that has concerns about in that case not so much 911 but police. But this has become a recurring theme in terms of doctors, the healthcare system, wanting to manage symptoms and not find ways of making people actually better and curing them when it comes to mental health issues. So I'm 100%. Hearing something come up again.
100%.
They sedate. They want to keep people sedated.
I don't want to get too personal, but what he went through. Just in for the 5 days of them evaluating of what he went through before he even saw a doctor was disturbing, to say the least. And the suicide rate in Canada is 11 to 14% per 100,000, and 7 out of 10 are male, And I also noticed there's a real discrepancy as to how they deal with 911 callers. I've called 911 in the past, and within minutes, they're at the door, or you pocket dial them by accident because of all these things with the phone, and they call you back to make sure you're safe. Why on earth did they not take this call seriously?
Okay, so let me work our way to it. You've raised one of the points that is one of the reasons why I want to do this interview with you and get this onto the public agenda. That there's a perception of bias in the way 911 calls are handled. But I just want to go back to the day in question. So it's after midnight on November 5th. So it's 1 a.m., the early hours of November 6th. He called for help.
Actually, just for clarification, It was on November 6th. November 6th, he was found dead in his home by suicide. But prior to his death, 3 hours before he passed away, and so that was at 10 o'clock on the 5th, according to Detective Randall Brown, he was screaming hysterically into the phone. He screamed twice that the system had failed him after they told him a car wouldn't be sent out.
Okay, so they knew that this was somebody who was... I don't want to say anything disrespectful. I'm not a clinician.
But, there was a previous history of mental crisis in that home, 110% over the 6 months.
So they knew what they were dealing with. But they didn't take it. But they didn't take it seriously.
They did not take it seriously. Their response was: it has been determined that proper procedure was followed within the policy of the communication center. While this incident was tragic, no information was provided during the interaction with the call taker to indicate an emergency requiring a response from our unit.
Okay,
that's what they said. Yet he was screaming, according to Detective Randall Brown, he was screaming hysterically into the phone. Now, if that is not a mental health crisis, I'm not sure what is. That's not normal, typical behavior of anybody that I know.
I want to quickly pivot though, because the city's made an assertion. I believe that was actually to CTV when they looked into this story a couple years ago.
That was in November 2022 on CTV.
On CTV, they made the assertion the call was handled properly, but that can't be evaluated without people hearing the call. You've indicated that a police officer describe the call in a way that seems to indicate that there should have been some urgency connected. There clearly was not, because they didn't dispatch a call for service. And you, your family, has been trying to get the 911 audio ever since, and you've been refused. Can you describe that?
And not only have we been refused for the FIPA requests, we've been refused on different reasons every single time. I also want to include that with their response, they also said that Dan had called, they said Mr. Rentz had called outside the time of the PACT program, where wellness checks are available only until 9:30 p.m. on a Saturday night. That's important to note, because mental health crises typically happen at nighttime. So I just want to add that in. The next thing to answer your question, did you want me to tell you what the refusals were? Because I have.
Let's just sort of walk through them instead of you reading them. I know that one of them was the filing, the Freedom of Information filing, was too early. It was turned down because the police investigation was still ongoing. Surely the police investigation concluded at some point, yet you still weren't given a copy of the audio tape of the 911 call.
Well, yeah, on November 10th, they said disclosure is harmful to a law enforcement or legal proceeding, but there was no, what we ask, what law enforcement matter are they trying to protect from the harm the truth would bring? You know, September 14th, disclosure harmful to a third party's privacy.
Stop right there. September 14th of what year?
That's 2023.
So the next year, I want to make sure my audience can follow this, Sheena, so that's why I'm interrupting.
Absolutely. A
year later, when you don't really believe there's any kind of actual police investigation, maybe the paperwork has been filed, so they have an excuse. A year later, just under a year later, your family again asks for the 911 audio to be able to compare the city's assurances, the police assurances, that the call was handled properly with the contents of the tape. You're turned down because of third-party privacy?
Yes, a disclosure harmful to a third party's privacy. The head of a public body shall refuse to disclose personal information to an applicant if the disclosure would be an unreasonable invasion of a third party's privacy.
Okay.
In Dan's case, who's the third party? He was by himself when he called 911, and he was by himself when he died. So who's the 911? Who are they trying to protect?
A 911 call, you've got... In this case, I'm going to break this down. You've got two parties involved, the caller and your family. You're the estate, so you're representing him. He's got no privacy, and because you're trying to get to the bottom of it. So he's got no privacy, and he's not trying, nobody on his behalf is invoking his privacy rights. Yep. There's only one other party involved, and that's the call taker.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you notice their last reason, they said because if the head of a public body may refuse to disclose information to an applicant, if the disclosure could reasonably be expected to harm a law enforcement matter or official or legal proceedings. So it seems to be everything they're saying is protecting, but who is it protecting?
Right. And I can tell you what that third excuse is. They're holding off. You keep asking. They know you're asking. They know you want to get to the bottom of it. Now they're pretending. You haven't filed litigation, have you?
Here's the kicker. December 28th, 2023, his mom applied for it. She was clear in her application as to what she was requesting. Their response to her, the records you request do not exist.
What?
According to your... See, I have all this documentation.
They erased the tape. They're saying the tape doesn't exist?
They said, according to your request for access refused under Section 12(1)(c)(1) of the Act, in the case of a record that does not exist or cannot be located.
Wait. I just want to make sure I understand this. Did she ask for a tape from the wrong date or give the wrong identification on what she was looking for, and that's why they're using this excuse?
Well, what she had wrote is, I thought that too. I went back because one of the times she had applied, she accidentally wrote 311, but she's also a mourning mother and she screwed up.
Yeah,
she
whatever.
Wrote them back. I'm just saying, she just screwed up that. She wrote them back and said, no, he called 911. And she said, my son called 911 prior to his death. And so they responded saying there was no tape. Let me find that piece of paper just so I have that crystal.
Well, you know what? No, I've got it in front of me from November 28th, 2023 from his mother, from Linda. I'm wondering if it's possible to receive a copy of the 911 call my son made the night of his death. He passed away at 1:15 a.m. and he made a call before. Would you be able to let me know if it's possible? She leaves her number. The various phone numbers he might have used indicates he committed suicide that night. Are you able to access IC where it said 311 call? Probably with a written transcript, and she meant 911. Has that been refiled?
Yeah, she refiled that one, but their little loophole, their little loophole is she said he died on November 6th and called 911 before. So he called 911 3 hours before, technically making it November 5th.
All right, so people are playing game. Yeah, Sheena, give me an opportunity to go to a break. We're going to come back. We're going to continue to talk about the path you've taken to try to get some information, some answers, the kind of concerns you're raising that are should be on the public agenda. Just give me
100%.
Yeah, just give me 1 second. Hang on the line.
Absolutely.
This is the kind of long form interview you don't hear ever on Winnipeg radio anymore. You don't hear any degree of effort devoted to digging into these kinds of stories, understanding the nature of police, 911 calls, emergency response, mental health, all these aspects. We're able to talk about all of this to be able to crystallize for you the very serious issues that are raised by this case. And you've already heard some of them. Somehow or other, a family can't get a hold of a 911 call that their loved one made before they died. Go figure. The issue of whether the gender of a caller affects the way that these calls, these emergency calls, mental health distress calls are responded to. The difference between if it's a big burly male or a female, that seems to be an issue, as well as the question of whether the address, the fact that this was by Logan and Arlington, may have affected the decision to send a unit down to do a wellness check as opposed to a call that could come from, let's just say, Queenston Bay. Who knows? We'll continue to go through this with the family member of the late Dan Rentz. More at the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast right after these words from our sponsors.
And they're saying the judge got it wrong. Everyone got it wrong. Everyone is wrong, but the city of Winnipeg.
For your home renovation and repair needs, call PKP. For over 20 years, we've built trusted relationships in the North End, West Kildonan, Garden City, and the Maples. Buying a refurbished home? We'll do your pre-purchase inspection and make sure you get what you're paying for. Go to our Facebook page, PKP Renovations and Repairs, or call us 204-297-5446. That's 204-297-5446. PKP Renovations and Repairs.
This episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast is sponsored by Jamrock Security, protecting your family, your business, and your community. Call 204-880-1564 or go to jamrocksecurity.ca, your trusted security partner.
Experience that agitation and shaking the foundation of ivory towers.
If I sound battle-hardened, it's because I am. I've made speeches to the legislature. I've made speeches to City Hall. My name has come up with regards to investigations I conducted. Even in the House of Commons, I'm going to stay on it. My full-time job, being your watchdog, being your voice.
Knowing that the masses outrank the chattering classes, you have the power on The Great Canadian Talk Show with Marty Gold.
We're back with the second part of our interview with Sheena Patterson. She had a long-time relationship with a fellow named Dan Rentz. Shared a daughter. Dan Rentz had, as you heard in part one, he had profound problems with his mental health, especially over the course of the pandemic and other factors. Made a call to 911 seeking help. The call taker did not send out a car to do a wellness check. 3 hours later, Dan had committed suicide. The family's been seeking answers ever since. And the constabulary has maintained, the city spokesperson maintained to CTV, that this call was handled appropriately. And you can't really judge that without hearing the call and the 911 tape. It either the city has variously refused to release it or claims it can't be found, although that might be a technicality. Sheena, there was another point that you wanted to make with regards to these evolving excuses for why the next of kin can't access the call for emergency help.
Well, I just believe that the discrepancy of the refusal reasons is an indication of guilt. It's clear attempt on the city's to avoid acknowledgement and accountability for the errors that were made that day. We just want the truth. My daughter just wants to know the truth. She deserves and she has a right to know the truth. You know, she's now without her father, and we were simply trying to understand the last few hours of his life, and it's been dragged out for almost 2 years.
Almost
now.
2 years. Now, you've tried different directions to get answers. You've tried freedom of information filings. Yes. Dan's mother tried a freedom of information filing as well. You also sent a letter asking to speak with the medical examiner's office because the issues here revolve around how the 911 service responds to these kinds of calls. It's a matter of public policy that can be reflected in literally life and death outcomes. So you reached out to the medical examiner's office and you got a less than uplifting response.
Yeah, she basically said she can't do anything. The only way that they would open up the case is if the Winnipeg police requested that. They said the family cannot do that. Every single person I spoke to, just a little blurb, I wrote letters to the editor, I went to CBC, W5, I talked to the Manitoba Watchdog, the Legal Health Center, the Police Accountability Coalition. I spoke to Wad Canoe's assistant multiple times.
Did you ever talk with Premier Canoe?
I never did. However, Linda, who is his assistant, I spoke to her on four separate occasions. I sent emails. I hand-delivered emails. On one incident, to be completely honest, she pretended like she never even received the email until I was sitting in front of her asking her, how could you have not received it? I slid it under your door at the office on Osborne, and I was told she had COVID. That's why she wasn't there.
Uh-huh.
And I sat in her office, and she told me that she never received the email and then later accidentally quoted my email. And I said, Linda, I said, did you get my email? And she put her head down and she said she did. And then she called Sherry Rollins' office. I had numerous conversations with her assistant who kept telling me, this is very concerning, over and over again. No help. I spoke to lawyers. I spoke to Peter Knightley at on the legal aid. He said, I urge you to seek other counsel. Like every single person told me, you got to do something, but yet no help.
And it's not like you're not a millionaire, so it's not like you can afford to just throw money at the problem. And this is a problem that could afflict not only your family but others.
It is affecting. This situation is happening on the daily in the city. Do you know? Like, there is a total discrepancy with the way they treat people. And if it was a white, I'm sorry, but
no, go ahead.
If it was a white woman in St. Patel, that car would be there. They would be there in an instant. I know that because I'm a white woman who lives off Pembina. And I call 911. They are there within 6 minutes the last time I had to call. 6 minutes.
These are what strikes me is that these are reasonable questions about how would they put it nowadays in the HR departments? Unconscious bias towards men, towards people who live in the wrong, the wrong parts of town. These are legitimate questions that are being raised. Now, I want to fill you in on something that you don't know. Actually, before I do that, with other interviews I've done with people who have been affected by crime or affected by dealings with police or their family members have, there's a lot of corollary, collateral damage, not just in terms of the losing the family member, the funeral, the family issues that arise, but on a practical day-to-day basis, all of a sudden families get hit with a great burden, whether it's costs, repairs, funeral costs, things like that. And this situation no different. With what happened to that home on Logan Avenue.
Yeah.
Can you describe a little bit of what happened?
I can tell you exactly. After the incident occurred, they shut down the home. They said that we couldn't go in there. It was immediately looted. Immediately, there was people breaking in at every window, every opportunity they could, because they put an announcement on Facebook saying there was a fire on Logan. So that's a little clue to thieves, to be honest. They know the person's not going to be in the house because there was a fire in the house.
And they don't secure the house.
They do not.
They didn't put fencing up around the house.
They put sheet plywood. They hammered it, and the people ripped it off viciously. We went there. We as a family, multiple of us, went there over and over again to put up walls to try to prevent these people from stealing.
And that's those are family possessions, things that you would have gone to your daughter, for instance, or back to his mother.
Dan wrote Lily a note, and he had said he had left something that was one of his text messages that was caught after. He had written a note stating that he had left belongings for Lily. He had left money, is what he said. He left money for Lily in a drawer, and he left a letter for Lily. We never found that because they took it. He built a bike for Lily. It was hanging at the front door. They took it. They took clothes out of the dryer. They took food out of the fridge. There's a neighbor who's a doctor who's at HSC, who was calling me constantly saying people are running out of the house with bags of stuff. It was like disgusting. I ended up leaving work and sitting on that fence watching to make sure that house was okay.
So this is my mind. This is again similar to the previous case that we conducted an interview on recently with the Singer family. The police complain about derelict housing, but then they go and they create it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I called them one time. One of the times that I went there, I called them and I said, hey, this is Sheena Patterson calling, letting you know I'm going to Logan. I explained the situation. I said, there's looters there. I'm going there right now to stop them. And the lady said, oh, that is not safe. You can't do that. So concerned of mine, because I'm a woman, so concerned about my well-being, but somebody who is out of their mental mind, screaming, begging for help, they can't send out a bloody car. You know? If that's not so clear as to how they treat men versus women, it's...
No,
you know? And minutes, there was police surrounding there when I got there, making sure that I was okay.
So, like, you're the criminal.
No, they were making sure that I was okay because there was looters breaking into the house. But that's what I'm saying. They were so concerned of my safety. Like, it made me actually sick because the guy called for help.
And I'm told that the house was subsequently demolished because of the fire?
Well, yeah, because continuously people were breaking in and the water pipes ended up bursting.
Yeah, of course.
So they started lighting fires inside the house, I guess, to keep warm, and they burnt the house. So then the city came in, demolished it. Never did we get access to that house to take belongings.
That's disgraceful.
All of my daughter's memories, everything that she had, you know, with her dad, everything gone.
I can't even fathom that's how things are done here. There's no... What happened to victim services? I'm just flabbergasted.
I called everybody. I called literally everybody. And nothing. It's just closed doors, closed doors, closed doors. Oh, it's going to be too hard against the city. Oh, they're going to be able to get away with this. This is what I keep hearing.
Okay. Let me tell you something that I heard. Essentially, what your concern boils down to, I mean, there's specifics about the way the call should have, first of all, that they're covering up, right? That they say it was fine, but nobody has heard the audio to prove what they're claiming. So that's stinks like a cover up.
Yep.
Okay. And then there's the issues that, what are they covering up? Should this have been handled differently? Is there systemically discrimination against men compared to women who make these kinds of emergency calls for help? Is there discrimination based on whether certain neighborhoods are perhaps redlined on mental health calls? And I'm not saying they are, but we don't know they aren't. This is something that arises from a discussion of this. The medical examiner says that they can't do anything, open a file, unless the police ask for it. So we know that that's not going to happen. I boiled down the problem that you're the riddle that your family's trying to solve is that you have a complaint about the 911 call. Am I correct in that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
My complaint is the fact that somebody, a human, a citizen, was calling for help, and that person made a judgment, and I want to know how much training do they have? Like, how much training do 911 operators have, you know?
It's not just a question of training. It's also a question of experience, because with 911 operators, I'm not slagging them. I don't know anything about them, but there's all sorts of factors. Whether it's a language barrier and a life experience, you know, like life experience counts when you try to understand, you know, when somebody's in distress, what they're saying and what the ramifications might be. So these are all valid questions. So I boiled down your issue to you have a complaint about a 911 call. Let me tell you, Sheena Patterson, what I did. I called the 311 service. And I said, if I want to complain about 911, who do I complain to? And she didn't understand, partly because there was a language barrier. So I walked her through it a little bit and said, oh, so you want to complain about the person who took the call? I said, well, no, not necessarily, because it could be they handled the call correctly by the book, but the problem is the policy. But somebody ended up dead, and we're trying to figure out who's supposed to look into this.
Exactly.
She puts me on hold for about 4.5 minutes. I mean, nice girl, you know, trying to be helpful. Okay. Puts me on hold for about 4.5 minutes. Comes back, asks me like a question and a half, says, I'll be right with you. Puts me on hold again. So I spent about 6 minutes on hold. And she came back with an answer. And it's an answer I kind of wasn't expecting. So apparently, Sheena, what you and your family are supposed to do to complain about the handling of this 911 call is complain to the Law Enforcement Review Agency, to LERA. Has anybody told you that before?
No.
This is 2 years later, year and a half later, and nobody's told you that if you have concerns, you should take it to LERA. Wapkinu's office didn't.
I've never even heard of LERA.
L-E-R-A. It has a very mixed reputation when it comes to these kinds of processes of looking into how the police handle things. But that's where it's supposed to go. So Wapkinu's office never told you that. Sherry Rowland's office never told you that. The police never told you that. None of these other organizations. I don't know that anybody realizes that, according to at least 311, that because the police operate the 911 service, that complaints about it go to the police oversight board. Oversight board, I guess. You know, IIU is one thing, and LERA is the Law Enforcement Review Agency, where if you have a complaint, a cop, normally it's cop roughed me up kind of stuff. But in this case, apparently, a complaint about how a call was handled is supposed to go to LERA.
Yeah, we were told the ombudsman is who we should be dealing with, and I dealt with them numerous times.
Wait, the provincial ombudsman?
Yeah,
I can see that, but she's in a conflict of interest. Isn't she married to a cop?
Yeah, from the information that you can find online, she's married to Jeffrey Norman, Jill Perrin.
So how does anybody take a complaint about Winnipeg police to the ombudsman?
I have no, you know what, to be honest with you, I've got no idea. And Lily put in her FIPA. It said at the bottom to contact the ombudsman. And she contacted them. They told her, oh, your rejection letter has expired. You have to reapply, and it has to be done within a certain amount of time.
Blah, 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 blah. So nobody actually wants to help this family is what I'm hearing.
Round and round. No, honestly, they're just trying to wear us out is what they're trying to do. But it's not going to happen. I'm never going to.
Okay, so I've now given you the information with regards to Law Enforcement Review Agency. I can send you you'll find the link to the page, but I can send you the
100%. I'll be on that tomorrow.
I'm astonished by these twists and turns. I'm astonished that families in suffering such grief are treated so disrespectfully by the authorities, whether it's police, whether it's these other agencies. You're asking entirely valid questions about how 911 service is discharged in the city. You're joining the Singer family in that regard and the Voijakis family as well, that have their own concerns about the ambulance that was sent out when Kyriakos was attacked at the Cork and Flame in the Cork and Flame Park. parking lot. So here's three stories now that I've covered in the course of just this year. This is since January now, where there's a series of questions. I have to correct that. The singers weren't about 911. It was about police on a mental health warrant. But it falls within the same realm. Okay, because it's all about the police and responses and emergencies, whether the police create them on the one hand or whether they encounter them on the properties. There's overall a lot of concern about what's happening when people are in crisis, when there's, whether it's violence or a threat of self-harm. I've talked with three families so far this year, none of whom trust the system at all.
Won't find too many people that trust the system these days. It's biased, and there's a lot of biases. And
The biggest bias is the CYA bias, because they're all covering their ass.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to report on your story, to stand beside your family, to ask questions, and to try to get answers.
Thank you, Marty.
And I'm at just such a terrible circumstance that, especially for your daughter,
especially for her.
And it's like nobody thinks of her. I mean, you do, but I say in terms of anybody who's not family, she comes last. Why?
How the hell is she supposed to try to seek some sort of closure if this thing is wide open, and kind of laughing in your face in a sense, you know? Like, we can do whatever we want. We can hide it. Like, so gross. Like, just be, you know what? I know from what I was told from Detective Randall Brown on that tape, I know that they made an error. All we are asking, acknowledge the error, apologize to Lily for what happened, and express how you're going to make changes going forward, whether it's more training, whether it's, you know, maybe it's just open discussion over how there's differences between how people are treated depending on what their gender and what their area they're calling. You know, I'm just trying to open up some communication and some truth for my kid is what I'm trying to do here.
I'm going to be reflecting this to certainly city councilors listening to this program. They're going to be getting a more personal email for me with regards to the point that you've just made. This is a stain on the city of Winnipeg. It's a stain on the service that residents of the city of Winnipeg have a right to expect, a high level of service. The city's falling short. I'm going to press, I'm going to press some city councilors with regards to this. We're going to keep our ears open and see whatever other paths might be available to your family to get answers and to seek closure. If there's anything else we can do for you, Sheena, by all means, send me an email or give me a call, and we'll continue to stand beside your family as you navigate these one-sided processes, these self-interest, these systems that are defending their own self-interest instead of putting the victims first. In this case, victim might seem like an odd word, but there's a tragedy. Your daughter and yourself and Linda clearly are victims. And
absolutely.
And there must be services provided for people who are put through such grief. And their grief should not be amplified by the negligent, dismissive, offhanded conduct of the authorities that you count on to serve and protect.
Absolutely.
Sheena Patterson, thanks very much for joining us today. Folks, that wraps up.
Thanks, Marty.
That wraps up this episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. Your comments about this or any other episode, your news tips, again, Interact donations. There's no government funding here. When we bring forward stories like this, it's because we're supported by listeners. And that means listeners like you. And it's important that we're able to continue to do this kind of work and give voice to people like this family and other families, because they clearly aren't getting a fair shake from the corporate media either. That's why we're here. We're here for you. We're here for your neighborhood. We're here for your family. We're here to protect your interests, to speak out for your business, to speak out for your values, and to stand against City Hall. We are your watchdog, and we will never forsake you, because our motto around here is, you have the power. Thank you for listening.
What the legacy media won't talk about.
They're too busy covering ribbon cuttings and other such things.
He will.
Winnipeg Radio, it's moved more and more away from being dynamic, provocative, and closer to...
It's Marty Gold.
that's not the way it should be, especially with broadcast licenses issued by the CRTC. But that's their problem.
On the Great Canadian Talk Show Podcast.
Not the power of CKY or CKRC, but we intend to try to match them in quality.
Thanks for listening to the Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to tgcts1@gmail.com or follow him on Twitter @tgcts.